Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show in association with Newsarama. This is John Suntress. Today, more words with artist Tim Bradstreet, who not only gives us some news about the double-sized Punisher 50th issue from Marvel's Max line, but also talks up books from the Raw Entertainment Studios, like Bad Planet, which is back on the newsstands, Alien Pig Farm, which is wrapping up, future projects like Bloody Pulp, we'll get into that, and what fans can expect from the Raw Studios booth at the San Diego Comic-Con. This episode of Word Balloon is sponsored by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades offers a huge selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all on up to 35% off, with orders over $50 receiving free shipping. And don't forget to visit InStock Trades' sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, at DCBService.com for all your pre-order needs. Major publishers are 40% off, and monthly specials are 45 to 75% off every month. Visit InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com. Tim will also take us back to his earlier Vertigo days, and we start things off with him talking about how he landed the job of doing covers for the Punisher series.
Oh, that was real simple. It was right out of the blue. I was doing stuff for Vertigo, working with Axel Alonso, who was editing a lot of books over there, So I'd done like Unknown Soldier was my first one, and then I think Human Target, maybe something else slipped in there. And then Axel offered me Hellblazer, so I was kind of, you know, asserting myself on that. I think I was 10 issues in, and I ran into Jimmy Palmiotti at a show in San Diego. He says, "Hey, me and Joe are doing this Marvel Knights thing," and I'm like, "Yeah, yeah." He goes, "We're doing a new series with the Punisher. Do you want to do the covers?" And I was like, "Please. Yeah, of course. Can I do them how I want to do them?" He goes, "Dude, you can do whatever you want." I was like, "Sign me up." It was that easy. I mean, Jimmy just approached me at a show. "Yeah, Joe and I want you to do that."
How about the Punisher movie? Obviously your covers became the trademark, but at what level of involvement did you suddenly come into the film?
I tried to get in on pre-production. And I emailed a friend, Darabont.
Frank Darabont, the screenwriter, for people who
know. Screenwriter. I met him through, Bernie introduced me to him like 10 years ago, and we all hit it off, and I've known him for a long time. And so I was just like, if anyone can get me Gail Ann Hurd's email address, it's Frank Darabont, of all the people I know. And so I emailed him, and I said, "Listen, I'm trying to get a hold of Valhalla Productions, Gail Ann Hurd's production thing, because I just heard she announced that they're doing this Punisher movie, and I want to get on pre-production." Frank was like, "Hell, I'll do even better. I know Gail very well. And Jonathan Hensley, her husband, you idiot, is a very good friend of mine." They're both very good friends of mine, because they'd met, I don't know when he met Gail, but he met Jonathan when they were both writing for Young Indiana Jones.
Okay.
So yeah, he just sent me John's email and said write to him, and forwarded it to Hensley too, and the next thing I know, I had a call. John's like, "I'd love to have you work pre-production. You're definitely working on pre-production. I'm a huge fan of your artwork." I was floored. So we get to yakking on the phone several times, and, you know, kind of as we started moving close to the movie, John's like, "You know what? This is out of my hands. I can't. I'm actually not in charge of hiring the production department, or at least our pre-production guys. What you call it, concept guys." He said, "And Marvel said, why should we hire Tim Bradstreet? We got all this art he's already done for us." I was like, "Really? I'm not going to work on production design because you already have a bunch of Punisher art? God damn it!" But I was, you know, I was kind of determined. I was like, well, you know, Jonathan and I talked about everything from set design to, you know, designing the villains and stuff. I'm like, that's what, you know, of course, no. I mean, Punisher's kind of figured out. And Jonathan's like, "Yeah, we're totally doing, you know, your version of the Punisher." And I was like, "Yeah, awesome." So that was figured out. So I was like, I wanted to design Howard Saint.
Sure.
I wanted to make him. I was like talking to Jonathan about casting. I'm like, "You know who you should cast?" He's like, "Who? Who would be a good casting for Howard Saint? As you read him on the page." I was like, "Terrence Stamp. Gotta hire Terrence Stamp. He'd be perfect. Are you kidding me? Silver hair." I'm like, "Give him a blind eye. Have him have a white, like, pupil. That would be awesome." You know? So I had all these ideas, and John was like, "That's cool." But, I got chicken legged. I got cut off the knee. I don't know what you call that.
Well, and instead of a cool Terrence Stamp, we got, although on paper, it sounded like it was going to be really, really cool. And it's,
you
know, funny.
What? You could have deconstructed Travolta. You were really aiming high. And it was possible to reconstruct or deconstruct John Travolta. That could have been cool. And I thought it started out pretty well. He seemed to unravel in a weird way. I wasn't scared of him.
Well, and I just felt he was too conniving and not Frank Castle. I mean, that's the thing. It became this very Iago kind of, let's turn the bad guys against each other plot where the Punisher would really just get the laser scope out and start, you know, picking guys off, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, he didn't scare me. And I thought, you know, when he's, you know, like cowering from the Hernandez brothers or whatever their name was.
Mm-hmm.
These Cuban drug runners or whatever they're. I was like, dude, he needs to kill these guys. I need to be frightened of this. He needs to be, an adversary worthy of being the bad guy in a Punisher movie. And he just never came off that way to me. It seemed like it was revenge against revenge.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Well, and which is not bad, but I missed it, you know?
Well, now I feel like Virginia Graham or Rex Reed or something, because you told me a delightful Hollywood story where Seth Green explained to you what was wrong with the Punisher film.
Out and back behind this restaurant, Seth proceeded to tell me, and it was absolutely hilarious. He practically acted it out. It was like he rehearsed this 100 times to tell me this story, or to tell anyone this story. But it was the whole process of Frank, the big problem, of course, that he had was how Frank had all this, like, where did you find the time to go in and plant these explosives underneath the cars in the shape of a skull? You know? And the way he made it sound, I could say, I couldn't defend it.
I understand.
And I have to say that when I first read the script and I was talking to Hensley, and he was like, well, so what do you think of this, and what do you think of this? And, you know, he's trying to bounce stuff off of me because he was, you know, not even in pre-production yet. So he's trying to get kind of as what I guess he deemed as a Punisher expert's opinion of certain things. And I came clean right away. I mean, it was like I'd never met John, and I just felt I felt fearless, you know, talking to him. He put me in that position, which was good. So I said, well, I see two problems. And there were probably little problems too, but I'm no screenwriter. But I said, I see two problems. One is you guys aren't going to shoot this in New York. And that's not as much of a problem for me because I can put that aside.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tell you right now, it's going to scrub the fans up. And he goes, well, there's no way around that because it's a budgetary thing. And I'm like, okay, well, I mean, of course.
Right.
I said, the second thing is the car sequence at the end. I go, aren't you kind of retreading territory that's been done in The Crow? Because to me, it just, I mean, forget all you know, where's the time go, or did, you know, why did he, you know, how did he plant these explosives into the car in the shape of a skull? Forget all that. The scene itself of just looking at these cars on fire in the shape of a skull is, like, to me, a direct ripoff of The Crow.
Yeah.
And I think the first rule of doing a movie is never to retread territory that's been done before, unless you can do it in an original way.
Sure.
And that particular scene just smacks way too much of, okay, you're using flames and you're using the shape of the icon. I mean, how much more overt can you get? And he said, well, you know, that's one of the things that Marvel loves about this thing. And so what I was forgetting about was that there's a lowest common denominator quotient in here.
You bet.
That sometimes works really well and sometimes doesn't work. And it obviously didn't work in this situation. Because, I mean, it would have been cool if there was a flaming skull or, you know, like something like that, but maybe just not done in that way.
Sure.
I mean, it might have worked on some certain level, but anyway, I'm rambling. I suspected that he didn't like it either, but.
So Tom is out.
That's just my impression.
Okay. Well, Punisher 2, the word has come out that Tom dropped out.
Tom, you know, he tried to, he wanted to make Taxi Driver. He wanted to make a good revenge flick or a good, you know, like a hard-boiled, like, God, you know, gritty street movie.
Yeah.
Which is the essence of the Punisher. You get right down to it, the Punisher of the 70s and the 80s. He was just an urban vigilante, you know?
when I spoke to him last year on the set of the Mutant Chronicles, he said the same thing. He's like, look, we started out with Welcome Back, Frank, and we went on a, you know, we went the wrong direction. And he goes, that's what I want to get back to is the core of the character. And that's the other thing that I found really interesting. As many problems as fans had with the film, everyone agreed that it wasn't Tom's fault and that he was playing the character right. It's just, it was the script and the choices that were made, like the exploding skull.
Right, right. Yeah, we could go on about it all day. And you know, the thing is that of course, I think that's true. I think Tom was fairly universally accepted, you know, in spite of the movie not living up to some people's expectations.
The other thing I was going to say, too, is the everyone I know that never read Punisher books likes the movie because they had no preconceived notion of who he was. So they're happy with the film, a lot happier, and say, no, it's a good gut level, you know, shoot 'em up, drive in kind of movie and stuff. That's fine. But again, yeah. not the Punisher for the hardcore fans.
Yeah. It's true of any kind of adaptation like that, right? Especially with comic books, built-in fans, a lot of them been reading the book for 20 years, you know?
Oh, sure.
Everyone has a preconceived notion of what they think the character is, and that's fair. But, you know, going into a movie with those kind of expectations is kind of detrimental to your experience, I think, on some levels, you know what I mean?
No, you're almost guaranteed to be disappointed, I think.
Yeah, because they're not going to, even if I still think they could have come close. I think they could have made a lot of Punisher. Like, if Tom would have been in the sequel and they could have done it the way Tom was hoping it would be done, I think that's what you saw. And that's the real shame of it.
Sure.
We were talking to Walter Hill in the last days before Tom decided for sure he was going to do it, drop out. We were trying to get Lionsgate to look at, I say we, I actually suggested, Tom was looking for ideas from anywhere, so I was all too happy to help out. I was like, he was killing himself to try to think of a director that Lionsgate would dig and that he could accept. And I was like, Walter Hill, man.
Yeah.
He said Walter Hill, because they have a relationship. And he knows Walter pretty well. I was like, dude, you just tell him you'll do that movie he wants you to do, but he has to direct The Punisher.
So are you still connected with the potential sequel?
I don't know. Avi Arad's the one that kind of said, Tim, you're doing the posters for the sequel. You are definitely staying on board. And I was like, righteous, man. Now, Avi's no longer in control over there. Someone else has stepped up, but Ari's still a producer on the movie. So, yeah, I need to talk to Ari about that, and I need to see if I want to. I don't want to be perceived as Tom left. I have a partnership with Tom, this publishing venture, this, you know, movie film producing venture, and I don't want it to appear like, oh, I'm just okay, I'm running with Tom. I'm a freelancer, man. There's no conflict of interest there for me. If I want to do The Punisher, I could do that. No one would be mad at me.
You're a soldier of fortune, Tim.
And if they cast the right guy, I'll be happy to do it.
Very cool. No,
I'll fight to do it.
Excellent. Well, now let me ask you this. What about the Destroyer and the Executioner, Mac Bolan and Remo Williams and guys like that? Did you ever consider like doing any Gold Eagle work? Did they ever come after you to do any stuff for them?
Well, I think there's probably a strong possibility of that in the future. Since I'm working with Gold Eagle, I have an editor up there that I've worked with before on a project. Avenging Angel book. No, one of the book titles is Avenging Angel. Series of paperbacks written by this guy in the 80s. And they kind of brought them back out. They dusted them off and went, hey, why aren't we publishing this book? This needs to be out because it's kind of urban crime, kind of borderline cyberpunk kind of stuff.
Okay.
And you know, this guy called me up and he's like, hey, I really want to work with you on this. And he had all these Punisher covers mocked up as covers for this book series. And so I ended up actually even using my Punisher model for this stuff. And I started this relationship with him there, and he called me back. He says, listen, I need to replace an artist on this book, a series of books called Rogue Angel. Let's do a series, man. I was like, cool. So right, that's what I'm doing right now. I'm my fourth cover in on Rogue Angel now. But the stuff I was talking about before was Jake Strait is the character. It's written by this guy named Frank Reich. Or Frank Rich, which is actually a pseudonym. I want to say, yeah, that's a pseudonym. That's actually another writer.
Okay.
That we know. I just can't remember who it is.
Oh. Is it like Doug Murray or somebody like that?
No, it's not Doug Murray. God, I'm kicking myself right now. It's actually public knowledge. So you can find out who it is.
All right, we'll have to do that on the net.
But it's not like Stephen King or anything like that.
Okay.
Not Neal Stephenson.
It's always weird. I always felt like they didn't really want to cop to the fact that, you know, Jerry Conway probably got the idea for The Punisher from those men's adventure books of the late 60s and stuff.
Well, isn't that public knowledge that The Punisher is the direct...
Mac Bolan?
Yeah, Mac Bolan thing. That's where the influence was.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure I've heard that.
Okay, I know that Don Pendleton seemed to be very proud of it and was like, yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and like, I know he was in one of those black and white Punisher magazines writing an essay about it and stuff. So, yeah, maybe everyone did cop to it.
That's pretty funny. I would like to read it. Yeah, I thought Romita Sr. had said, yeah, it was definitely one of our, you know, the main influences was that's what we were looking at. That was our model. We wanted to do. I think that was the directive. We got to do a book like this. We got to do a character like this.
And isn't it funny that they? I remember in the early 90s they tried to do an Executioner comic book, and you know it just was by a fly by night company. I don't think the art was very good. I think Pendleton wrote it, although I'm not sure when he passed away.
Too bad. It seems ripe for a comic book adaptation.
Yeah.
I mean, ripe. That makes no sense to me. That is kind of stunning to actually consider and think about, but they've never done a. An Executioner, or a Mac Bolan comic book.
Yeah, never a regular one. No. Tell me about some other stuff.
You have to do it right, though.
What's that?
You'd have to do it right, though.
Well, yeah, you need the right guys on the interiors, and you need the right guys doing the covers.
You have to do material justice somehow, and you need somebody that really kind of, whose style kind of fit that. You know, like Chris Weston would be pretty cool, great on that, something like that.
That'd be cool.
Some of you would have been fantastic would have been Eddie Bubovich before he passed away.
Yeah, you know, you guys worked together on that Human Target series. And that was with Pete Milligan, and that was really such an amazing series. And I've loved what Milligan did afterwards with the character as well. But I really felt that series and The Unknown Soldier, I was really pleased. I mean, your covers were great, and the interior art in each case was just knockout work as well.
I was kind of bummed that I didn't get called to do that that second Human Target miniseries, the cover jobs on that, because I think I was happy with those covers that I did at the time, but anymore I consider them weak in my body of work. I always wanted another crack at it.
Did you feel like that was when you were just kind of making the transition and you didn't know as much then as you know now? Is it that kind of thing? Or
no, well, you know, I was still using my old technique. I was, you know, in my dark room, you know, shooting each, you know, like printing each photograph. You know, I had my sketch down, you know, on my rough, like laying on underneath my enlarger.
Okay.
Going, okay, this photograph needs to be this size because it's got to fit in this spot right here. So just really, like in terms of today, archaic kind of thing that I was doing back in the, you know, in the 90s, the mid-90s, early 90s. And so that was one of the problems. I could compose those covers way better now. I have a way, well, come on. I mean, you have more knowledge. I've always wanted cracks. It's like stuff that I've done in the past. I'm like, oh, I could have a shot at that. I would kill that now. I've had so much fun. And that's just one of the prime examples. You see, Target's like one of those ones I'd always just like to revisit because I think I could kill it now, knock it out of the park.
Is doing interiors just like, you know, something that, you know, you just wouldn't have the time to do or the patience to do or the ability to do it fast enough? I know you're inking. And, you know, you're...
No, I'd do interiors if I could find the right project, but I just can't. I haven't found it yet.
Okay.
You know, it's not even my project. Like,
I was going to say, Red Sky Diary, yeah.
Yeah, too big. Too big. It would be such a monster project. And unless I could find someone to pay me like $500 a page, you know, and I'd have to drop all my other work.
Okay.
Unless someone could really kind of pay me to do it. I just can't see doing it. It's just way too big. So right now I'm thinking we're actually kind of gearing toward the Red Sky Diary book at Raw.
That's cool.
Because we want to move the property as a film.
Okay.
And the easiest way to do that right now is to have a narrative. You know, kind of an RG that's already done. Here's
sure.
the book. Here's what the characters look like. It just seems like that's the way it's being done now. You know, we could go in and pitch it, but we don't have a writer. We don't have a script for the main movie yet. So... we have to sell it as this comic book idea first, and then that process gets a lot easier. So I'm talking about doing like a prequel book, But I have to find the right artist. You know, it's got to be a guy who really kind of fits that time frame. It takes place in the late 1800s. And so it's very period. And someone just has to be very, you know, really powerful style and also fit that criteria for the period stuff. Tough to find. You're going to find a diamond in the rough.
Sure.
Someone who will do it for, you know, 300-400 a page.
Wow.
Or at least 120 pages.
Wow. Do you look in, you know, Europe or any place like that?
I'll leave no stone unturned if we move forward with turning this into a comic. I will find the guy. And I have a very powerful persuasive talent. I have a hypnosis that I use when I talk to people that makes them want to work for me. And I'll work in the book, too. I'll probably do a prologue and an epilogue, or I will have pages throughout the book. This isn't going to be your standard comic book. This is going to be a story that will have sequential, and it will have pages that are just complete, like here's a page of the diary, here's these diagrams and sketches of this coven, and these tools that, you know, like just shit that all the characters in Red Sky, each of the hunters, keeps these journals.
Mm-hmm.
And so there'll be journal pages, you know, kind of like Guillermo del Toro's sketchbook. That's what I want them to look like.
That's cool. Or even like Da Vinci kind of pages and stuff like that, that, you know.
Exactly.
That's cool.
Exactly. And so there'll be that, and then there'll be full-page illustration, and I'll come in and I'll do some stuff, or I'll do some, you know, a little stretch of sequential. So whoever I find to do this book, I want to share it with, you know, make that artist a part of, you know, where it goes from there. I want an investment in that person, so I'm willing to give up a piece in return. You know what I mean?
Sure. So is horror pretty much where, I mean, Raw, you think of things that are coming out from you guys, and they all have the component of, you know, a little bit of sci-fi, a little bit of horror in there.
Yeah.
And are there other genres that you want to attack through Raw?
Certainly. And, you know, horror is, today, kind of, you could misunderstand what we want to do with horror based on the kind of perception that's out there today. We don't really do slasher horror. We do psychological. I like to think of like the stuff that we want to do is psychological horror. And that doesn't mean that there's not going to be blood and guts and stuff like that, but it's not so cheap. It's, you know, well, sure, I mean, we might do books that are just for fun, like Alien Pig Farm.
Sure.
That's a hilarious book, but for the most part, at least where I'm coming from, I want to do very serious material. And so the horror aspect is you know, a lot rooted in psychological horror. You know, like Lovecraftian stuff, or, you know, it's just great horror, just throwback horror in a way.
Well, now, and that leads to a project that you mentioned, and I don't know how public you want to get with it, but do you want to talk about one of the other projects that you mentioned to me in one of our conversations?
You mean The Bloody Pulp?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, that kind of covers what you were asking about before. Do we want to do any other genres? Well, the first book is horror and science fiction, so we'll be sticking with the theme there. But the second book we want to do just like a crime book. Urban, you know, gritty crime book with maybe a Vertigo twist to some of the stories. I love that Vertigo is now, you can use it in conversation with a Vertigo twist.
No, you're right, it is. It's shorthand. Isn't that funny?
It speaks well of what they've been able to accomplish over the years.
Absolutely.
Know?
At what stage is Bloody Pulp in that you're able to talk about it? I mean, is it just really still on the drawing board? And
I can tell you all about it because nothing's set in stone right now.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I can throw it all out there on the carpet. We want to do this anthology book that would have a backbone story that would spread across 4 to 6 issues, where it continues every issue. There's our anchor. Then we want to have, you know, like 8-page stories that are, you know, over and done in 8 pages. A couple of 2-part stories that will spread between 2 issues, maybe 3 of those. So we have one that continues, you know, that goes 1 and 2. Another story that goes 3 and 4. Another story that goes 5 and 6. And then, you know, and then kind of jammed in between all that, 5-page stories, 10-page stories. And so we're going after, like, heavy hitters because we're like, listen, 5-page commitment, money in the bank. You can get people to do, you know, 5 pages or 3 pages in some cases. So we're going after one guy I really want to work with is a guy, Daniel Zizej. I think he's, the heck is he, Croatian? Something.
Okay.
Not quite sure. Fantastic artwork. He did that book El Diablo with Brian Azzarello.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, that was a great book. Absolutely.
Congo Jim, was that another one? Congo Bill.
Congo Bill. I remember Congo Bill, the old 50s DC character. Congorilla.
Yeah, they did a little mini suit. Axel, you know, hired this guy over Vertigo. So Daniel, not a huge name, but we, you know, among the fodder, among the talent we want to try to get is Mignola, you know, to do like a 3-page story. Love to get Steranko to do some pages.
Wow.
But we're going to be realistic, too. Eric Powell is going to do a story for us.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah. He's verbally committed to it. So, you know, I think it's dangerous to announce that. It's not like, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, no one's going to die.
Okay.
But, so just a bunch of, you know, we'll have Jim Daly. Jim Daly and I are going to do a story. I wrote this story called Cannibal Crew about a bunch of, crew out in space that turns into zombies, tries to kill people.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
It's an Outer Limits episode.
Very cool.
So, the writers we want to get are like, you know, John Landis.
John Landis, okay.
Write us a little story. Del Toro to do like, I'd love to get Del Toro to do like a 10-page story and have Richard Corbin do the artwork. Darabont's gonna, you know, he said he'd write us a story. Dave Scow, who's a great, great author. Bruce Jones.
I don't care
if he's under contract or not somewhere. He's got old stories that don't fall under the auspices of those kinds of contracts.
But that guy's
got
amazing.
Material.
Well, and that guy's amazing, and I think, you know, his stuff, when it's not superhero stuff, I think that's his best element. I really think that's when he's really in his milieu, you know, for lack of a better word, because you think of those Hitchers that he did, that HBO series, that was a great series.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, this guy's built for anthologies, and you reminded me that he was, you know, back in the creepy and eerie days. I mean, I remembered his stuff from Pacific Comics, and you had to remind me that, no, he even goes back 20 years earlier than that.
Right. I mean, God, he wrote some great stuff back then, like Twisted Tales and stuff like that he wrote. I mean, Bruce has a long track record, and and wrote for the Outer Limits, when they revamped the series back in the 90s. And so Bruce is an old friend, too. Another guy I met through Bernie. Old friends, old beer friends.
Can you get pages from Bernie?
Yeah, we're going to actually, Bernie, the plan for Bernie is, Bernie will be involved with this, is that Bernie is going to do the frontispiece to every issue.
Wow.
And it'll either be a frontispiece illustration or it'll be the first page of the comic. So there'll be like an introduction page to each book. And we're going after Stephen King to write it.
Jesus. That's
so
cool.
Stephen King, Bernie Wrightson, are you kidding me? Del Toro. And it's not all about Hollywood or anything like that. We're going after great horror writers. That's what we're going after. I don't care what medium they work in. All these guys have a track record in horror. I mean, Darabont wrote such a fantastic, I don't know if you've ever, you can probably find it somewhere, his screenplay for Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. It was going around Hollywood on a cloud back when he wrote that. That was really put Darabont over the hump, that script. It was just unbelievable and completely got screwed up by Kenneth Branagh. Another one of those cases where a star, you know, he was so hot after Henry V and Dead Again?
Yes, Dead Again, absolutely.
And his star was just rise, and, you know, talking at the time that, you know, they were going to do the Star Wars prequels and that he was going to be Obi-Wan. Anyway, yeah, very popular guy at the time and, you know, had director pull.
Well, he did such a great job on those Shakespeare films. I mean, they really, Henry V is an amazing film.
It's an amazing film, no question. So he had the clout.
Sure.
And he wanted to do it. And so the studio had... They thought they had lightning in a bottle, and it turned out that it was a nightmare. And I don't know that Darabont's ever recovered from that not turning out the way it could have.
Really?
That was a tough blow. He's pretty mad about it. Not debilitatingly so, but he definitely, you know, got the chip.
Bummed him out, yeah.
God bless him. I would, too.
Yeah?
I do for him. I did the covers for the Tops movie adaptation.
Oh my God, I forgot about that. Okay.
That was like the first time I met Darabont. I had the cover to number one laying there, you know, opening my portfolio. And Frank walks, he's looking through my portfolio and he goes, hey, there's my movie. And he points to the picture of Kenneth Branagh on the cover, and he says, and that's the son of a bitch that ruined it. I don't feel like I'm out of place saying that. I think it's common knowledge.
Hey, you know, we've never talked about your association with Clive Barker. Tell me about that and how that happened.
That's just cool because Clive can make anybody feel like you're his best friend on the planet. He just has that gift. And he's like that with fans. He's like that with everybody. He's just gregarious, wonderful, approachable, down-to-earth dude. And you're completely in awe of him, you know, when you're around him. But I got together with Clive when I was doing Age of Desire for Eclipse, the doomed project that has never seen the light of day. 48 pages of graphic novel that Eclipse didn't pay me for and then lost for 7 years through their bankruptcy. I thought the pages were gone forever. But they resurfaced finally, and I do have them. But, if I ever feel comfortable publishing it. I met Clive a couple times. I met him at a retailer show, and then I met him at another show and get to hang out with him and talk to him about the project and had meetings with him and stuff like that. And yeah, just fantastic dude. And we've always kind of maintained I talked to him in a long time, but if I called him tomorrow and said, hey, I want to publish Age of Desire, do you mind? Do you want to get behind it? He'd be like, yeah, whatever you want to do. Like I talked to him 3 minutes ago. Great dude.
That's really cool.
And what an incredible artist, by the way.
Really?
Oh, his art's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Completely erotic, homoerotic. I have pictures in my copy of The Inhuman Condition. I have a hardcover copy of The Inhuman Condition, and it's the book that Age of Desire is in. And I brought it with me to a show where Clive was at, and I asked Clive, I said, can you sign this for me? He goes, sign it for you. I'm going to draw you a beautiful picture in this book. I was like, please. You know, I was like, oh, man, this is going to be incredible. And I don't even know if it's safe for me to describe the drawing. But it culminates, it's basically a money shot that goes from one page arcing over the other page into something. It lands somewhere that I cannot even mention. So, yeah, but it's completely hilarious. It's an incredible piece of artwork done in like 10 minutes. And I'll treasure it always.
You got a one-of-a-kind collectible there.
Well, you know, he draws in everybody's book, so it's like there's probably a million people out there that have five Barker drawings, which is great. But the creator, it's like having Mobius draw in your book.
Hell yeah.
You know?
That's awesome. Do you want to talk about what's coming up for Punisher with the 50 book or anything like that?
Oh, well, you know, nothing, you know, the 50 book is, I guess it's going to be a double-sized issue by Howard Chaykin, incidentally.
He's doing the interior.
Which I find rather odd. I love Howard Chaykin, long time fan of Howard Chaykin. Howard's a pal. I love that man. But personally, I'm interested to see, you know, where he goes with it artistically.
And we saw a rough of your, not the final cover, but something close to the final cover of Punisher 50 that Marvel has used for solicitation.
Yeah, it's a double-sized issue that Howard Chaykin's doing. And Garth came up with the idea for the cover. He doesn't usually do that. And so I did this cover, and I actually had it on my MySpace page for a while, and people were just freaking out. They're like, this is the coolest. My God, this is your best cover ever. On and on and on. And then, like a month later, I get an email from Axel, or from my editors at Marvel, and they're like, Garth doesn't like the cover. He wants you to change it. So I had to make some adjustments. So it's not the version everyone's seen. But it's very close.
Okay.
But yeah. And it really is one of my favorite pieces, too, so I hope people get a chance to see it.
That's excellent, man. Oh, you know, I wanted to ask you, and I meant because you mentioned it before, that you've got a guy as a Punisher model. I was telling someone that I was in the midst of doing interviews with you, and they said, well, how come he always puts himself as the Punisher on those covers? And I'm like, I don't think so, man.
I wish I looked that good, please.
Well, I think maybe the ponytail is like, well, the Punisher never had a ponytail. I'm like, yeah, but that's kind of a reach, man. I don't think Bradstreet makes himself the Punisher. I really
that
don't.
That actually correlates to that conversation we were having about people that would meet me at shows and go, hey, how come you don't have any tattoos, man? I thought you'd be covered in tattoos. Why? Because all my characters had tattoos for like a decade. Strange stuff. But that's weird that he identifies that way. Yeah, Tom, my model, not Tom Jane, but Tom O'Brien. Yeah, he's got really good, like, hair that goes down the middle of his back, to his waist. So we tie it back to those covers. I thought that was really funny, too, in that forum thread we were talking about a few minutes ago, based on the first part of the interview. Mm-hmm. Some guy mentioned, he made some, like, kind of, I think he was digging on me for my photo stuff, and then he says, and I've never been a fan of Tim's Punisher because it doesn't look anything like Frank Castle. And I'm like, what? Is this guy smoking? What is he supposed to look like?
Yeah.
Carved out of rock? That's pretty much what I do. But.
Well, not only that, I think that, yeah.
How is it a stretch?
Well, I don't know, but that's one man's opinion, and I think there's like a stack of covers that are there, which is a pretty strong argument to say, well, that might be your opinion, sir, but there's got to be a reason why you've been doing it for so many years, man.
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, well, there was a lot of people who came before me. Wait a minute.
Oh, sure.
Does his Punisher look like the Punisher should look like? I don't know. It's a cartoon.
Well, no, and it's not like you've taken Tom from the film and you know, like in the same way that, like, Tom has become Cal McDonald's become Tom in a good way.
Right,
what,
right.
But, you know, that's what I mean. I mean, it's not like Tom Jane has become the Punisher either. So
No. Well, you know, that was the whole thing. When I did the posters, they wanted me to do, they wanted me to draw Tom Jane like I do my covers.
Sure.
So, and then that was like, yeah, of course. Yeah, easy to do. And that's how it should be done. It should bridge the comic crowd and the movie-going crowd. So it has to be this kind of, like, split between the two styles.
It really was this cool transition from that early publicity photo of Tom wearing a skull T-shirt.
It was just terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think everyone was like, oh, really? That's what it's going to look like? And then, you know, your stuff came out and all the pre-film art came out and stuff. And it was like, oh, okay. there he is.
Yeah, those guys didn't get it. And in fact, like the publicity, whatever was driving the publicity didn't get it either. I remember they did this photo shoot with Tom down in Florida off the set. And I think it was Wizard magazine that ran these photos. And it's like lit and makeup like a glam photography photo shoot. Tom's got this sheen of baby oil sweat on him. And his hair's all styled. And they've, you know, like shaded in his cheekbones. And they really look like covers for some gay magazine. He's boiling up. He's the punish. You know, it's just like terrible stuff. Purple lights.
Mm.
I mean, it was embarrassing. When I saw it, I was like, oh my God, no. How could they do this? Absolutely terrible.
Yikes, man.
But they got, you know, thank God. Tom Jane went to bat for me to get that gig, to get the theatrical gig. He was like, why don't we have, they had some other poster done, theatrical poster done by this company. And they were sitting around a table, they were having a meeting, everyone was looking at it, and it was like, oh God, it looks like TV Movie of the Week stuff. And they sent it to me, I gotta look at it, and it is pretty terrible. So Tom was like, why don't we just have Bradstreet do them? And they were running, you know, short on time, they'd already wasted all this time with this little company, and they were like, well, let's at least ask him. And they came to me and boom, I got it. Woo! Awesome.
So we'll see you at the Raw booth?
Yeah.
Very cool.
I'll be in Artist Alley mostly, but I'll be at the Raw booth for signings and for, you know, hanging out and stuff like that. Niall's the same. Jane will be at the Raw booth quite a bit. We're going to have signings with Mark Schultz, who, yes, I forgot to mention, will be doing some work for us in Bloody Pulp.
Excellent.
And we're going to have Wrightson signing with us. And, oh, I think it's fair to announce this. I'll announce it right here. For the longest time, we were talking about who's going to do the trade paperback collection cover for Bad Planet. Who are we going to get to top this line of artists that we had through the book?
Go ahead and list your murderer's row of who to choose from.
Well, the first issue was done by the original series artist, Louis LaRosa, and then I inked it.
Mm-hmm.
That was the issue that came out in 2005. We are re-releasing that book, and it's got a cover by me and new series artist, Jim Daly.
Okay.
So the first one is Jim Daly and me. The second is Bernie Wrightson.
Very cool.
Bernie does the convict ripping this guy out of an airlock in outer space, out of his rocket ship. It's cool. great cover. Classic Bernie. Cover three is Mark Schultz. A stunning piece of artwork. I can't go on enough about that cover. It's way too cool. Just have to go look at it. Bad Planet.
Glimpses of it in the Word Balloon magazine, I might add. Courtesy of Tim Bradstreet. Yes, indeed.
Well, that's right. I forgot about that.
There you go.
And then for the fourth cover, we have me. That's where there's a big letdown in the series. And I did a cover previously for it about, I don't know, 8-9 months ago. I'm scrapping that when I'm doing a new one. I'm no longer satisfied.
Okay.
I'm doing a new cover for issue four. So the one that people have seen or that you can see on the Bad Planet MySpace page is not the one you're going to see on the stand.
Okay.
And then the fifth issue is Mike Kaluta.
Oh, fantastic.
A gargantuanly gorgeous piece. Oh, my God, this cover is so cool. And then the sixth cover is Dave Stevens.
Wow.
So how do you top that? We decided we wanted a painting. We were like, let's get a painting for this collection. And Tom's like, who should we get? Well, a year and a half ago, I ran into Paul Gulacy at Dragon Con. And had a great weekend, yeah, with Gulacy. But he's not doing the cover.
Oh, my God.
At that same convention, and I sat next to him all weekend, was a legendary painter by the name of Basil Gogos. Famous Monsters of Filmland.
Oh, yeah.
Creepy, eerie. I think he covers for Eerie.
Yeah, an amazing artist, absolutely.
Yeah, the probably most influential horror artist of the 60s and 70s with his portraits, classic portraits of, you know, like Family Opera, all the monsters.
Oh, yeah, all those iconic Famous Monsters of Film and magazine covers, 9 out of 10 of them are Basil's, absolutely, if not all.
Yeah, and then he came back and he was doing stuff for Monster Scene more recently. So anyway, Basil Gogos is doing us a convict portrait. And for those of you who don't know, the convict is our main character of Bad Planet. So, yeah, we got Basil Gogos to do a cover, and it'll be done like next week.
Oh, that's fantastic, man.
So we're hoping that we get in the time to be able to make some, you know, freebie posters advertising the series.
Oh, that's great. Well, hopefully those will be at the Raw booth as well.
If not, we'll at least have a giant, like portrait. We'll have a reproduction of it in the booth for people to stare at for hours.
Very cool.
That's how we're, actually, that's our plan, to kind of keep people hypnotized and hang around our booth all weekend. Just put the Basil Gogos painting there so that they won't want to leave.
Well, I want to put visuals to a lot of what we've talked about in our conversation, so... You've got the Red Sky Diary MySpace page. There is a Bad Planet MySpace page as well.
Yeah, and you can access either of those just by going to my page. And they're you know, my top friends, right? They're my only friends. No, they're pages I manage as well. So they're up there, easy to click, easy to get to the page just by going to the Tim Bradstreet page of MySpace.
Very cool. Excellent. No, I really look forward to hearing more about Bloody Pulp and, you know, checking in and seeing Bad Planet back on the newsstands and Alien Pig Farm 3000 as well.
That's really a lark. You get people, you have to pick up Alien Pig Farm 3000. It's getting great reviews, by the way. Sales aren't blowing the doors off, but people that are reading it are going, this is really fun stuff.
Well, pitch everyone who's not reading it, man.
It's about, you know, these hayseeds in Kentucky. These guys who are, they run moonshine. They live with their dad. His name's Papa Dad. The one guy is, you know, in love with his sister, who is not actually his biological sister. So it's kind of okay. And aliens, they end up, I think someone blows up their still, cops blow up their still, and uncover this alien spacecraft that crash landed during, you know, like when Earth was La Pangea,
okay.
You know, when it was like dinosaurs roamed the earth. And the ship's been buried down there, and anyway, the crew kind of, you know, like comes out of their cryogenic tanks or whatever, and they start terrorizing the countryside, and it's an absolute hoot to see how these rednecks, and I say that playfully, deal with this problem. It's written by Todd Farmer, who wrote Jason 10 and The Messengers, a guy who can write some pretty, you know, creepy horror stuff, but he's funny as all get out. He's so funny. It's like the Dukes of Hazzard meets Mars Attacks. And I'm not like this huge like Dukes of Hazzard fan, so I don't, you know, like if I heard that, I'd be like, oh great, but well, no, it's so funny.
Well, the Mars Attacks part makes me happy, so that's cool. And I mean,
and it's total throwback stuff. The artist Don Marquez. Sorry to kind of interrupt you there.
No, no.
But I have to sing the praises of Don Marquez. What we wanted for this series to kind of really get the flavor right for it. Tom really wanted to find some guy that could draw, like, you know, the Al Cap strip stuff.
Little Abner.
Yeah, Little Abner.
Yeah, and no, yeah, Al Cap,
like,
absolutely.
You know, like some guy that draws like Frazetta doing Little Abner. That's what we need for this. And we found this guy, Don Marquez. And he's got this, you know, EC 50s throwback style. And it's absolutely hilarious. It so totally fits the material. And it's funny, when we do the collection, I think we're going to include it. We're going to do like a digital version that you can download.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to come with music and all this stuff. Now, Don used to be in this, you know, like somewhat legendary late 70s punk band called the Twinkies. We just found this out. And they did a classic song that gets airplay to this day about aliens from outer space. It's like this, you know, old throwback, I use that word again, throwback kind of 60s surf, you know, like the monsters in the funny cars or the muscle cars.
Sure,
you know,
sure, cartoons. Absolutely.
You know, like monsters style of cartoon humor. That kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
So it's got that kind of almost like a Monkees backbeat, but it's like punk rock.
Well, that's funny.
There's a Twinkies MySpace page. You go listen to it.
Okay.
That's going to be the theme song for the book. I think it's great. If we do a movie, that song is going to be in the movie for sure.
That's awesome. So what issue are they on right now?
4 will be out in August, I do believe. Yeah, and then we're going to collect it.
That's awesome.
So hopefully, if you missed the regular series, you'll go out and get that trade paperback. I think if you pick it up and look at it, you almost have to buy it.
That's very cool. No, I love
it. I think we're going to have Mark Schultz do a cover for that.
Oh, for the trade?
Who incidentally did some brilliant covers on the regular series. The last cover, issue 4, is where we basically hired Frank Frazetta to do a cover for us. That classic, you know, Frazetta brushwork. We may have already talked about this in part 1, I can't remember.
No, we didn't.
Yeah, you just have to see it to believe it. And it's plastered all over the Alien Pig Farm site. It's at alienpigfarm3000.com. You gotta see that cover. If you're a Frazetta fan, if you're a Mark Schultz fan, if you're a fan of that classic brushwork style, that pen and ink style, it'll blow your mind. I showed it to you, right?
You did send it to me. I don't know if it made it on the first part or not. I can't remember.
It's stunning. It could easily be a John Carter of Mars piece, if not for the giant alien that doesn't look anything like a Martian.
No, Mark's awesome, man. He's a great, great artist, and I love Xenophobic Tales, and I love that cover that he did for Bad Planet as well. So
Xenophobic Tales.
Isn't it?
Xenozoic Tales.
Xenozoic. See it, wait.
But I like Xenophobic. That's even better.
Well, those are his stories about being at the Port Authority and seeing immigrants come in and being very freaked
exactly.
out by them. Well, that shows
right,
you how late it is. No, listen, hey, thank you. This is fine, and this is wonderful, and I appreciate you coming on, and look forward to seeing you in San Diego, man.
Bring this thing down to 45 minutes and you've done your job.
Tim Bradstreet, make sure you visit him at San Diego, both at Artist Alley and at the Raw Entertainment booth. He will be there representing Bad Planet, Alien Pig Farm, and future plans as well, as we've heard. So make sure you stop by and say hello. And I'll be at San Diego as well. I'm coming in on Friday, and I'll be hanging around the Century Guild booth. I want to point out that issues of Word Balloon Magazine will be available at the Century Guild art display at the San Diego Comic-Con. And we'll also have hundreds of copies at Wizard World Chicago, the convention coming up in just a couple weeks. So make sure you say hello in San Diego. This episode of Word Balloon is sponsored by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades offers a huge selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at up to 35% off, with orders over $50 receiving free shipping. And don't forget to visit InStock Trades' sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, at dcbservice.com for all your pre-order needs. Major publishers are 40% off, and monthly specials are 45% to 75% off every month. Visit InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com. Thanks again for listening. This is John Suntress. Don't forget, Word Balloon is all over the internet. We're at newsarama.com. We're also at iTunes, at our MySpace page, myspace.com/wordballoon, comicspace.com/wordballoon, and, of course, all the various podcatcher sites, Podcast Alley, Podcast Pickle, you name it, we're there. Anyone has any questions or suggestions about the show or comments, I can always be reached via email, john@wordballoon.com. So hope to see you at the con. If not, we'll be talking next week with a wrap-up of some of the things we saw at San Diego, and we begin the march towards Chicago. So keep listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2007, all rights reserved.